Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations works with people to increase their organizational and individual potential by assisting them in identifying habits, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations that hinder their performance professionally and socially. Life Conversations is committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, "What if?" Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580 or go to peacecorps.gov.
If you think depression is all in a person's head, you're right. It's a brain illness. And like other illnesses, it has symptoms. A person suffering from depression might feel sad, empty, or numb. They might sleep more or less, eat a lot, or not at all, or show little interest in participating in ordinary activities. Mood swings, including anger and sadness, are common. They're often tired and have a hard time concentrating or making decisions. Depression can make those who suffer from it feel hopeless. It can even lead to suicide. If you see the symptoms of depression, get that person to a doctor. With medical help, depression can be treated and suicide can be prevented. Learn how to stop depression from taking another life. Call SAVE, Suicide Awareness Voices of Education, 1-888-511-SAVE, on the web at save.org.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
I am great. I am wonderful. I am whole. I am peace. I am here. I am strong. I'm free. Well, I'm the delight of God. I am you. I am healed, I am love, I am great, I am wonderful, I am whole, and I am free.
How great thou art, how infinite, how wonderful. Yes, yes, and yes. My breath begins and ends with you. So, no need to find God, no need to seek God. Your breath begins and ends with God. Just think about that for a minute. No, don't think about it. Feel about it. My breath begins and ends with you, with God. Yes. Stay with that. In that space, you become responsible. You become awake. You become alive. The God is what is breathing you. That God is you. My breath begins with you and ends with you. I mean, come on. And not just you. Your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, the neighbor, the supervisor you can't stand. Their breath begins and ends with God. The Muslim, the Christian, the Hindus, the atheist, the agnostic, whatever you want to call it. Their breath begins and ends with God. The woman you look down on, the man you can't stand, the child is autistic. Their breath begins and ends with God. Tell me that doesn't make you feel sacred and holy. Yeah. Breathe in and breathe out. I am bowing in gratitude and love to you. Wow. Welcome home. Good afternoon, good evening, good night, good morning, good day to you, wherever you may be at this very moment in time. Thank you, thank you, thank you for tuning in to yourself and tuning in to Life Conversations Radio, where change begins and you make a difference. Just knowing what is breathing you is a powerful difference on this planet. You're actually being part of the healing that is needed. So when things rub you the wrong way, when people get on your nerves, breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in love and breathe out trust. Breathe in compassion and breathe out joy. That is the awakened couple. When you honor the masculine and the feminine of God, what I call the duality of oneness. There's nothing you need to learn anymore. There's nothing you need to know that you don't already know. It's about embracing what you know, embracing who you are, embracing all that is. Father, Mother, God, how great thou art, how infinite, and so are you, listeners. Yes. All the other challenges that we have is just to keep it exciting. The thing about work is just to keep it exciting. Not enough money, excitement. Looking at what people are doing on Facebook and condemning them. Excitement. Honey, boo-boo. Oh, my God. I can't watch the excitement. The housewives. Ooh, excitement. Oh, I mean, come on. Some people, if you take their drama away, they won't know what to do. They'll be like, there's no point for me to live. So we've got to allow people to have their drama. And open-minded mean being open-minded. You know? Okay, we don't have time for that right now, so I'm just going to leave it and move on. Yes, you are listening to the Ask Life Coach Ade radio show. I am your host, Life Coach Ade. I am so grateful to be here as your conductor, as your coach, as Ricky Byers said a few weeks ago. You know, and I'm listening to the coach, and we get to work together, move together, dance together, and win team, because it's all about recognizing and knowing that on your mark, get set, flow. Life is good. It's getting better. We're going to bring Celeste on in a minute to give you some announcements, and we're going to get ready for Richard Moss. Today we're talking about embracing the awakened couple. Embracing the awakened couple. And if you're thinking, well, I don't have a relationship, I'm single, I can't find anybody to be in a relationship with, just be patient. Let that go. Just let it dissolve. Let it dissolve away. And make yourself available to fall in love with a part of yourself that you've been running from that you didn't even know existed. It was run from a part of ourselves. And some of us, we just like, I don't want to look at that. I don't want to focus on the negative. And what you're running from, you're saying, come here, I love you. I got something great for you. Ooh, can you feel the excitement? No, I'm afraid. Don't be afraid. Be amazed. Let's bring Celeste on to do the announcement so I can bring on my friend, my brother. I love this man. I love this man. He's a wise elder, and I'm so grateful that he's around and he's doing his work and inspiring us. Richard Moss, Dr. Richard Moss, and let's go to Celeste. This is a great day, isn't it? Hey, Celeste, how are you doing?
It's a wonderful day. We have Richard Moss in the house already. I love that man. I know time he calls, every time he's on the show, I'm just saying, when you just read about somebody in your books, going through your personal study, and you get to meet them, well, it's just a beautiful way to live. So I'm just going to say hello to the family and do the announcement. I can't wait for this conversation today. Hey, you!
Me too. I'm excited.
Let me breathe. Thank you for that, by the way. You sound great. I'm going to get to it. Welcome to the Ask Life Coach Today radio show. My name is Celeste Morgan. I'll be keeping you informed of all the happenings going on with the Ask Life Coach Today radio show and LifeConversationsRadio.com. You can find Life Coach Today right here from Monday through Wednesday from 12 until 2 p.m. Eastern. If you happen to miss them live, all the shows are archived. You can even subscribe on iTunes by entering Life Conversations. You don't have to go a day without Life Coach Today. Now, you really want to call in with your questions, thoughts, and anything that you're dealing with today with Life Coach Today and Richard Moss and allow them to support you. The call-in number is 347-426-3346, and make sure to press 1. Now, if you can't call in, post your questions on the Ask Life Coach Today fan like page. Please be sure to create a new posting. We want to make sure we get to you. Now, if you don't do or can't get on Facebook, go to LifeConversationsMedia.com, hover on the Life Conversations Radio menu, then you will see a drop-down menu. Click on the Ask Life Coach Today button and fill in the email. And you can also join me around 1 for Celestial Moment with Celeste Morgan, where I offer the energy of the day on the Ask Life Coach Today radio show. Also, you can email Life Coach Today any time of the day, and he will answer your questions on the air. The email address is ask@lifecoachaday.com. Now, the theme for the month of January is Release Your Inner Splendor, and we have wonderful guests coming up that will help shift you one conversation at a time. We also have great shows on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Go there to find out about more of them. And the Ask Life Coach Today radio show is syndicated on Within Radio every Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern. For more info, go to inspirebroadcasting.com. And then finally, you have an opportunity to contribute to the Ask Life Coach Today radio show. Go to lifeconversationsmedia.com, then hover, don't click, on Life Conversations radio menu, then click the Ask Life Coach Today drop-down menu, and you will see a donate button on the right-hand side. We thank you in advance for your financial blessings. Now, that wraps up your announcements. Let's welcome back Life Coach Today.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Celeste. I appreciate you. We'll see you back around one.
It's getting better at doing my voice. Good job.
I know. I'm Celeste. I'm here to give you the energy of today, and I'll see you around one.
Don't make me come down here and get you. Thank you.
Thank you, Celeste. Life is good. It's getting better, and you are part of the process. Today's theme, topic, conversation is about the awakened couple with a wise elder who I'm bringing on in a few minutes. This is Karen Drucker. Let's listen to a little bit of what Karen has to say about that part of us that we're afraid of. The gifts of the goddess, love, joy, and peace. If we just embrace the feminine, embrace our woman, and learn. But no, don't give away the show. Wait. Let them wait for it. Let them wait for what you have to say. Richard Moss is in the house. Get ready to expand, to blow up in consciousness. Karen Drucker, Gifts of the Goddess. Just a bit of that, and then I'm going to bring on Richard Moss. And this is your time to go share the show with folks, because we need each other. But don't force it on them. I'm just saying.
Love, joy, and peace. Gifts of the goddess. Are you ready to receive all the gifts of the goddess? Love, joy, and peace. Gifts of the goddess. Are you ready to receive love? Are you ready? Joy. Are you ready?
Coach, are you ready to receive? Yes, I am ready. Cheryl, are you ready to receive? Monica, are you ready to receive? Tracy, Electra, are you receive? Who else? My brother. Gregory Dunwolf. What's going on, my brother? Are you ready to receive? Glenda, stepping into a whole new territory. I'm so proud of you. Tam Tam! Are you ready to receive? I know the answer is yes. I hear the resounding yes, yes. Are you ready? I am ready to receive. I don't care what you say about my voice. Action! Oh yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. Yes, it is mine. Abundance? Oh, I mean, come on, heaven, yes.
All right, Karen, we're ready to receive Dr. Moss now, so we're going to slowly fade you out of here. Karen Drucker, Gifts of the Goddess, KarenDrucker.com, and we started the show with Agape Choir. Mother, Father, God. And to find out more about Agape Choir and Agape and the great work that Michael Bernard Beckwith is doing and Ricky Byers Beckwith, go to their website, agapelive.com. Agape Live. The love is alive. You've got to embrace it. Agapelive.com. And right now, it's time to bring on this wonderful man. I mean, people, are you ready to receive Dr. Richard Moss? Come on, I can't hear you. Are you ready to receive? Okay, they're ready. Did you hear them say yes? Oh, I did. I was just getting a little bit excited. I can't help myself. Richard Moss is internationally respected as a visionary thinker, teacher, and author of 6 books on transformation, self-healing, and the art of conscious living. He's teaching bridges science, psychology, energy medicine, and spiritual awareness practices. His philosophy is entirely pragmatic. You could use it, apply it. Work in consciousness must alleviate human suffering and address the root causes of why and how we create so much conflict in ourselves and our world. It's time to start answering that question and sit with that question rather than judging and blaming. That's my addition. That's not in the bio. I mean, that's just a little bit about him. And he's the author of this wonderful book, his latest book, Inside Out Healing, Transforming Your Life Through the Power of Presence. If you don't have it, get it. Go to the library, get an ebook version. I don't care what you do. So get it or not, but get it. So, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, psychics and skeptics, physical beings and non-physical beings, help me welcome my first guest of the year 2013. Oh, excitement, Dr. Richard Moss. How are you doing, Richard Moss?
I'm doing fine. I've been listening in for about the past 10 minutes. You sound like you've been having a really good time.
I think that's the only reason we're here, to have a good time. And if I'm not going to have a good time doing what I'm doing, I need to just give it up.
Exactly.
Hi, Happy New Year to you.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, and to you and to everyone who's listening.
Yes,
and to everyone.
Yes. It is nice to have you here. I am excited for what you're going to download and share with us. And so I'm ready to receive. I'm ready to jump into the conversation. But first of all, I got to ask this question. It's been a while since we spoke. And a lot has happened. So I always need to check in. This is where we do the spiritual check-in in. I want to check in. I want to ask you this question. Who are you? Who is Richard Moss?
Oh, dear. I'm someone who's continues to learn to learn. And I'm going to turn 66 in a few weeks, less than a few weeks. And it was interesting to hear you refer to me as an elder. I guess I am in a bit. But some of what I want to talk about today has been inspired in me by a couple who are a good deal older than I am and done amazing pioneering work in relationship. They're Jack Zimmerman and his wife Jacqueline McCandless, and they have a wonderful book called Flesh and Spirit. And it's some of their ideas. They've been kind of my relationship mentors. Some of their ideas I'll be sharing today. So who am I? A person just awakening to the wonder and mystery of life and self in the deepest sense, trying to do as much good as I can for the world while I'm here.
Yes. Yes. Learning to learn. I love that. You know, for me, and just to get a little bit personal here, when I hear people talk about when I was a child, since I was a child, or when I was two or three, I was a grandfather talking to me about life, asking me questions. And there was a part of me that was sort of like, wow, who would I be if I had that? Not from a place, I don't know what place it's from, but it's a question that I ask myself, so I won't even go there. But I sometimes just catching myself sitting next to my grandfather or going hunting, like people say, or going whatever we do, going to forest or just sit and listen to music. And I wonder what that would be like for me. But I didn't have that because I never met my both my grandfathers died before I was born. And so for me, you sort of represent that for me. And even I know in the Western world, sometimes, you know, people, I think people tend to look at the elder. We don't, in the Western world, we don't respect, honor those who are ahead of us, those who came before us, those who are older than us. Because I grew up in Nigeria, that means so much to me. So when I hear you, it's like, oh, my God, you speak into my soul. There's nothing I've read about you that makes me go, oh, I don't know about that. You have a way of reaching into us and shining the light on what is great about us and gently, lovingly walking with us to go to what we may call the shadow self, the dark side of our own self, and look at it, you know. And that's one of the things that I love about you, and I'm so grateful for who you are and the work you're doing. And so I'm bowing to you and saying thank you for what you do and what you're doing and who you are.
So, you're really welcome. You know, it's interesting, and I didn't realize that you came from Nigeria. And isn't it fascinating that there is a message or a spirituality or let's call it a consciousness dynamic that is really universal, and it doesn't matter what country we come from. It probably, you know, once we reach a certain age and we're old enough to understand certain kinds of ideas or at least entertain them, it doesn't matter our age. And what we're going to talk about today is the question of how much our gender matters and what kind of mistakes we're making there, maybe. But really, as you know, 1969, Neil Armstrong stepped onto the moon, and he looked back and he saw the Earth floating in space, saw the whole Earth. You know, when the astronauts orbited closer, they could see part of the Earth. But we see the Earth through that photograph from the moon, the way we see the moon. We see half of the Earth, and we see it rotating, which the moon doesn't do. So we get to see the whole Earth from space. And from that moment on, in the subconscious mind, everybody on planet Earth began to realize that we're all Earthlings, that all the boundaries and borders that have, you know, come through historical processes are really, in a certain sense, artificial. There's only one air, you know, one atmosphere. All the oceans, even though we give them different names, are just one body of water swirling into each other in these massive currents. And then we need, if we are all Earthlings, we need something to understand about ourselves that's universal, not something that is true for you if you're Jewish and maybe not true for you if you're Christian. And then if you're of one of the different many sects within Christianity, then you're arguing about those things. And then there's another contrast with Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism and all the different religions. We need some kind of not only a faith, but a way of understanding ourselves that is universal. And I think that's what you hear in what I'm sharing, and that's what you're sharing. Otherwise, I wouldn't keep coming on the show. And you know,
I know that's right.
Truly, yeah. Truly. And so that's what I think we're going to start talking about today is, you know, why is it that when we think about God, and I understand that what's happened in evolution is people woke up and realized, wait a minute, I'm aware of my fear, but what part of me is aware? I'm aware of my prejudices, but what part of me is aware that I'm aware of my, you know, my sensations and my beliefs, and I can question those beliefs, and that's why belief keeps evolving. That's why what we understand or we think about the world keeps evolving, because we become aware of what we believe, and then we question it, and then we see it through a different perspective, and then we question it again. And this never-ending process of evolution of perception, evolution of interpretation of perception, evolution of belief, it's never going to stop. And so we began to realize, well, there is one thing behind all of that, whatever we want to call it, and people called it God. Some people, not Buddhists, because they don't believe that there's any independent origination. So everything unfolds from relationship to other things in the Buddhist philosophy. But they still have a notion of the avatar, or the notion of the Buddha, or the Buddha nature, that is represented by a male figure, just as in the Judeo-Christian and Islamic traditions, you know, we have this male image of God. And I just started wondering about that. You know, why is it? And then we then talk about a goddess and the goddess energy in opposition in some way to the God energy. But nevertheless, we think of this one consciousness, this one, you know, monotheism, this one source, this one God, and we give it a masculine image. And, you know, it's time to question why that happened and what that means. And that's why today I thought you and I might talk about what would have happened, or what starts to happen inside of us, if we realize we don't want to separate. We don't want to see this ultimate source through masculine symbology alone, or some other component or complementary aspect of that masculine force through female and feminine symbology alone. But what if we put them together? What if we say they're indivisible? I mean, after all, we were all born of woman, and it required the seed from our fathers. And whether we get to do it in test tubes or not, we're still putting together the male seed and the female egg. You know, no matter how much we try to exempt people from the process, we're still taking the two is what we use to create the one. And right. When that one pops out, it ends up being male or female. And yet, none of us exist except really. I mean, there's no such thing as a world that's just a world of women or a world of men. So what would happen if our divine image was actually the two, the divine couple? Well, what would happen if that was the way we represented to ourselves the source? Or that we would at least we would step back from representing that ultimate source, the Godhead, so to speak, as male, as just masculine. And I know this is kind of, you know, intellectual really at this level, but it means everything in terms of what we start to try to live together as people. And those people who hear this as something about relationship between men and women have to understand that I'm really saying, what would your relationship to life be if you didn't think of the Godhead as a masculine figure? You thought of it as equally and inseparably male and female. And I don't mean androgynous, and one figure that's both. I mean that too is a kind of interesting concept. But, and, you know, I'm sort of kind of swinging around out here, not knowing exactly how this is going to land on the ground or touch people's hearts, but it's so, you know, we can't imagine it. We're so right. deeply, deeply inculcated with this notion of a masculine deity or a masculine avatar, or, you know, the Buddha nature still represented in a masculine symbology. And just why do we do that? And what are we in a movement into a deeper integration of masculine and feminine? What does that look like in our lives? What were those people, those men on that bus, so afraid of that they would kill a young Indian woman medical student? Mm-hmm. What, because she was out late by herself with a friend she wasn't married to? Or, I mean, where does that come from? That kind of fear of the feminine, that alienation from the feminine. And we don't want to swing to the other side. We don't want to swing just to a feminine perspective.
Right.
And so, you know, my friends Jack Zimmerman, Jacqueline McCandless, they've been experimenting in their relationship with imagining that the deity was the divine couple. And I started to kind of think about that, just to feel toward it. You know, what would that mean? What would that mean?
Yeah. How would our life change? How would we relate with one another? And, you know, and I think, you know, depending on your spiritual development or where you started your religious journey, you know, what I'm really trying to say, Christianity blamed the problem of humanity on the female. You know, she was being blamed on Eve, and you know, and
well, that's even before Christianity. You know,
say more about that.
Well, that's the Old Testament. You know, the Old Testament. Why, even in the Old Testament, is two things happen? Eve is the one who eats of the apple. Eve is the one who wants to know about good and evil. Eve wants to know about duality. Eve breaks the rule. So we say, at the one hand, you know, Eve is the one that disobeys God's, you know, rule. God, and remember, I'm talking about a scripture that was written by human beings who are long, long gone. I don't think God wrote that. I don't, you know, people wrote that.
And they were,
men. And they were men, exactly. And they were men, and yet, unconsciously, they gave Eve gigantic power. I mean, they turn around and blame her and say, you know, now Adam and Eve are cast out into a world of suffering, and they don't have the same protection that God gave them before. But actually, they're cast out into a world where they can grow in consciousness. So these authors did two things. One, they blamed the woman, and the other is they gave her gigantic power. She is the one who doesn't obey God. Now, isn't that incredible? She disobeys and starts us down a path of evolution, which we could call the path of consciousness. You know, otherwise everything was instinctual. We lived in the Garden of Eden. Everything was harmony. Everything was just the way it was. There was no shame. There was just life. You know, it was basically a world without consciousness. And so here's a story. You know, now we become conscious of contrasts, of left and right, up and down, hot and cold, good and evil, right and wrong, happy, unhappy, can't, should, shouldn't. And of course, that's the birth of a particular level of consciousness. And so interesting that we give her that power, and then we turn around and say, somehow she's the temptress, somehow she's the disobedient one. And this incredible long history of fear of the feminine, I don't know if it starts then. Obviously, if it was written then, it started even sooner. I don't understand why it's there, but I know, as a man who wants to be a lover, that really seeing my woman and really allowing her to pierce me with her perception, her criticism, I don't mean attack. I mean her perception of me, her way of viewing the world, her sensibilities, her hopes, her fears, letting that enter me, and not presuming that I know, and maybe know better because I'm a man. I was recently just talking to a man I'm good friends with and have mentored for a long time, and kind of a wise father figure for him, and struggling in his relationship, and how much he just assumes that his perception, his perspective, it's in some way about their lives, about raising the kids, about the family, about finances, that his perspective is really somehow right, and in some way she should get on board and follow him. And I looked at him and I said, you know, are you listening to her? You know, maybe she has a way of looking that's so completely different than your way of looking. Take it in, you know. And he began to realize he wasn't looking, and we've been having this conversation for a while now. And some of the things I say to him, he says, "Oh, gee, my wife said that to me last week." She said it to me. She said, "You don't really listen to me," you know. And that's true. Most men don't really listen to women. we don't really, not really. And we have this kind of male entitlement, and it's right there. We can see where it starts, because you look at the Sistine Chapel ceiling, and it's God reaching out toward Adam. And while I see that image at many levels, it's still two males. And we see the female and the feminine in a secondary role or a complementary role or a supportive role, in so many different ways, instead of in an empowered, wise, authoritative, equally an expression of divine mystery and divine truth as a male representation, and yet we don't see them equally, not yet, and we're struggling with that now.
It's showing up in every area of our lives. It's showing up. It's showing up in politics. It's showing up everywhere, in individual. We're wrestling with it. I wanted to just ask you, let me just bring it home, because I really want to talk, I want you to break down, define what you mean about the awakened couple. But before we do that, because we're talking around Eve, we're talking about Eve, I wanted you to sort of talk about Lilith. We got a question about Lilith. She said, are you familiar with it from the Hebrew text, and what are your thoughts?
You know, I can't. I just don't. I'd have to go right now to one of my books and look up Lilith and read and think. So I don't know.
Okay.
So I'm not an authority on the Bible, but most of us, most of us do spend time with Genesis and with the story of Adam and Eve, because it's the very beginning of the Old Testament, and you know, it's what starts to happen after God creates the manifest universe. So no, I really wish I could answer that question, but I don't know. But now that it's been asked of me, I want you to know I'm going to, after the show, read about Lilith.
Yes.
And give it and see what happens inside of me.
And next time you come back, we'll talk about it, which won't be too long. this is home for you. You can just call us up. I'm feeling something bubbling up for me. Do you have some time for me? And the answer will always be yes. Now, let's talk about the awakened couple. What do you mean by the awakened couple?
Okay, well, I mean that I'm allowing myself to think in a way I haven't thought before. I'm allowing myself to feel and look at my relationship with my partner, Annalisa, in a way that I haven't looked at myself in relationship before, so that I can allow that process of relating to my experience through this image of the divine couple to help me imagine into existence different ways of relating, new ways of relating, or more balanced ways of relating, or more complete ways of listening, relating, being present, making love, dancing, and I mean literally dancing. Because in dancing, there's a wonderful thing that happens. Men typically lead and women follow, and then out of that process of an agreement to follow and an agreement to lead, some very wonderful things happen in dancing. Mm-hmm. So what I'm really saying is, for everybody who's listening, try it on. Just try it on. It's not an easy thing to do. And it's not going to come, I'm not going to be able to write some intellectual treatise about this. I'm putting a seed into myself and into those that are listening, as it was placed into me by others who started inventing what would happen if they just tried to imagine that there isn't ultimately a one, but always a one that becomes two, always. Mm. And that, if I have this image, let's say on the head of a coin there was a male, and on the tail of a coin there was a female, right? And the coin is very thick, so you begin to imagine that these two things are very different and very separate. And we are different. Our brains are different. We're anatomically different. Our hormonal cycles are different. Women house new life in their bodies, let it gestate, bring it forth into the world. Men do not do that. I often say that if a man were pregnant or started to notice his belly getting big with something inside kicking around, he'd cut it out to find out what it is. He wouldn't say, okay, let's see. Let's experience what this is as it is. So what I'm saying is I'm not trying to attack anything. I'm trying to substitute or enrich or add to something that goes on in our subconscious minds so that maybe we will look at life in a different way or invent in a different way. I mean, imagine if every single time you went into a church and Jesus was hanging on a cross, right next to them with agony in her face is a woman with a baby's head crowning through her vagina and she's in labor. That fundamental, repeated, generation on generation, essential suffering of the giving forth, of bringing forth of new life. Of course, Western medicine, modern medicine has managed to take away a great deal of the suffering, and sometimes that may be good. I don't think it's good all the time. And certainly we've stopped women from dying in childbirth. But what happens if you walked into a church and both those images were there? You know, that men have a very unique experience of suffering, suffering the consequences of bad judgment, suffering the consequences of battle, of war, suffering the consequences of their identification with beliefs that make us enemies of others and or make us believe that we can continue to dominate the planet and extract every fish from the ocean and keep, you know, raising cattle and eating more and more animal protein and so on and so forth, and slowly poison ourselves. This is just, you know, coming through intellect, through mind, imbalanced. But would we be thinking differently? Would we be treating the earth differently if every house of worship... And the reason I'm choosing the image of a woman giving birth is because why we see Jesus suffering, and the dogma that he dies for our sins, and it's a he, and God gives his son, well, he gives his daughters too, you know. Why do we think that way? I mean, it's so hard for us to step outside of this kind of thinking, and that's why. Just the image of the divine couple. I don't think I'm anywhere close to living anything remotely like a divine relationship or a divine couple, but I'm not trying to live a process of a man who wants to realize or become one with the ultimate consciousness, nirvikalpa samadhi, or whatever it is called in different traditions. I'm interested in what emerges out of this enormous deep respect and listening and between two people, and in particular we're talking about male and female because that's what brings the next role of life, and because there's no such thing as man without woman or woman without man. And I know at a different level in our audience there are many, many people, and you were talking about this when I was listening to the show before you introduced me, about, you know, don't poison yourself or hurt yourself with the story, I'm alone, I don't have a partner. Because everybody has a partner all the time, every moment, which is your next breath, which is every perception, which is all the feelings and sensations, which is the words that come out of your mouth and why you say them and who you say them to, and what, you know, and I mean, we're constantly in relationship with life, and so I understand that, and I know that we're also talking about this very multidimensional dance, multi-leveled, multi-dimensional dance between masculine and feminine, male and female, and yeah, I don't know that consciousness is male or female. I doubt it. And yet, to be conscious as a male, and to incorporate with profound respect my appreciation of woman, changes me as a man. I mean, And the other way around, for a woman to incorporate profound respect and not fear and not subservience to a man or to the male changes her. So we are co-creating each other. We are inventing each other. How a man relates to a woman, it transforms the man. How a woman relates to a man transforms a woman. I'm walking around now. I'm getting passionate. I'm walking around.
I understand. Yeah.
And you know, this just, we're just at the threshold. We're imprisoned in so much belief and in unconscious male entitlement and women, many women, have within them the rage of all women. And it sometimes comes out against a specific man in their own life. And you can tell that it's not, no man deserves that rage. This is a woman tapping into the collective rage of women from millennia of being unseen or diminished or relegated to very limited roles and not given complete freedom to actualize themselves. Now think about that. If women had complete freedom to actualize themselves, what would men be like? And how can a man have truly actualized himself if woman doesn't have the exact same complete freedom to actualize herself? Mm-hmm. And this is what's wonderful about our world right now. This is what's emerging. I mean, you talked about the Agape Choir, and you know, Michael Beckwith and his wife are bringing forth that wonderful movement. So much, I think, we're going to see coming forward in the world in terms of deep, deep spirituality is going to emerge out of partnership.
Yes.
Partnership between a man and a woman. I would love us to elect the presidents of the United States. You know, everybody got so... Yeah, right. Everybody got so upset that Hillary Clinton was so respected by her husband that he gave her a lot of power early on in the Clinton presidency. And then we didn't elect Hillary Clinton to be a president, you know. Well, why the hell not? I mean, really? Why is it that we have a president? What if countries were led, literally? Just think about that. What if countries were led by a man and a woman who were in deep, deep partnership and had, you know, were working on their stuff? I'm not saying that the Clintons are, I don't know. I think they're a pretty good model for the best and the worst and the struggles and of all couples. It's just that they got to play theirs out in the public stage.
Yes.
Pretty hard for them. I have my deep empathy for them through all those years. And you know, but think about that. You go into a temple, why is it a rabbi up there? Why isn't it two? You know? Mm-hmm. I understand that two people talking at the same time is not possible, but the partnership, the dance. And so that's, you know, that's the divine couple showing up. You know, sometimes when we really love art, it's because it's the tension between male and female. It's presented in a really beautiful film, for example, or in wonderful poetry. And I don't know. This is just me, you know, at this point in life, wanting the most undeveloped archetype in the male side is the lover. You know, these four archetypes that Michael Moore and other psychoanalysts have talked about: the man as warrior, man as king, man as magician, and then man as lover. And right now in our world, the man as lover is the least developed aspect of the masculine psyche. And the reason for that is because we don't give complete power to a woman. A woman, the female, knows that love and the body are completely inseparable. You know? And men think that love and the body are very separate. You know? And so men become undeveloped as lovers. Oh, yeah, we're really good with our technique, you know, and we take our tantra classes and we know how to twiddle our fingers the right way. That's not really being a lover. That's a piece of being a lover. Lovemaking is a discipline, a practice for the divine couple. And conversation is a discipline and a practice for the divine couple. And I know that none of us are the divine couple, but we can aspire to it. We can say, what would it really be like to have that much reverence for each other, to really listen profoundly, to have an art form for the way we communicate, the way we talk to each other, a disciplined art form. We call it in our relationship consecrated conversation. And I teach this to people in my work around the world, this art form for listening to each other. And, of course, it's not just for men and women, but sometimes it's really hard for men and women to hear each other because of the unconscious conditioning.
Yes, I mean, what you shared there, there's so many things, and, you know, that it's for me pulling out the thing differently, asking different questions. And that's what you shared just now is why I see relationships, particularly romantic relationship, as the best gift for us to discover ourselves. But if we take this unconscious belief system into it, then we leave it jaded or blaming women for the divorce rate or men for divorce rate. But what I hear you sharing with us and asking us to do is to ask deeper questions. Why is it the way it is? And when we can ask those questions, we allow ourselves to open up to a new awareness. Now, we want to take a break and come back with Celestial Moment. And I actually want to do the Celestial Moment because it goes very well with this conversation. It always does. But after that, I want to go back to what you said about men don't really listen to women. And I want to tie that in with the conversation about the agreement to lead and agreement to follow when we're dancing. Now, in a Western world, I think the idea we've looked at, to lead is better than to follow. We get parents telling their children, don't be a follower, be a leader. I mean, if everybody's a leader, there's no need for a follower. But I want to tie those two together. When we come back after Celestial Moment, I want us to go deeper, and I'm really helping the listeners listening now to give them some practical things they can do in their relationship, even if they're okay, married or in a romantic relationship or not. If it's just a good friend, a good girlfriend, a good boyfriend, whatever it is. So we're going to take a break. The number is 347-426-3346. My guest is Richard Moss. He's the author of Inside Out Healing. He's written several books. His website address is richardmoss.com, RichardMoss.com. You can find out about his work, and he also has some courses on there that you can take. It's free e-courses that you can take, you know, to really apply what you're hearing and release the awakened couple within yourself. It's not about debate, but it's about asking questions so we can all grow. You're listening to the Ask Life Coach Ade radio show. I am your host, Life Coach Ade. We're going to take a break. And the number is 347-426-3346. For your questions, your comments, your thoughts, your doubt, your pondering, your I never thought of that. 347-426-336. I love the fact that I can crack my own self up. Okay, let's take a break and we'll keep this transformation train rolling. We'll be right back. We are assisting you to move from where you are to where you want to be. Ain't that right, Mr. P? Go ahead, tell us.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Hi, this is Jack Armstrong, author of Lessons from the Source. You're listening to Ask Life Coach Ade on LifeConversationsRadio.com. Many blessings to you.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Did you know when the body is balanced, it heals itself? This is the guiding principle of Dr. Mark Armstrong. Dr. Mark is the founder of Ahimki Center for Wholeness. Ahimki is a wellness center that offers services and training programs that help you grow yourself. Ahimki is a word which symbolizes our commitment to honor the sacredness of all life and our respect for the vital force that flows through all living creatures. We seek to teach and heal, and thereby express our love for mankind, the earth, and the infinite universe. Ahimki Center for Wholeness services include acupressure, foot detoxification, Reiki, iridology, massage, Ahimki Mind Management, which is a process that uses the natural rhythms of the body to balance the mind. It enables total well-being and getting the thinking out of the way so the brainstem can do its work, and much more. For more information, visit ahimki.net. That's ahimki.net. Ahimki Center for Wholeness, honoring the ancient practice of energy medicine.
Maybe you're right. Maybe you don't need to talk to me about sex. Maybe you do control what I'm exposed to.
But maybe not.
Maybe I hear about sex every day.
In the media, from my friends.
Maybe while you're not talking to me about sex, everyone else is. So talk to me. Tell me to wait to have sex.
Because you can influence me.
For help starting the conversations, visit forparents.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Life Conversations works with people to increase their organizational and individual potential by assisting them in identifying habits, attitudes, beliefs, and expectations that hinder their performance professionally and socially. Life Conversations is committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Life Conversations Radio.
Giving a voice back to the community. To the community. To the community. To the community. To the community.
That's right. Giving a voice back. Nobody took it from you. You thought somebody else had your voice. It's time to express. It's time to share. It's time for you to show up as who you really are. It's time to evolve. It's time to grow up. Don't think about how. Take a deep breath. I'm breathing the breath of life, the breath of God. Allow one of the, maybe the, let's see which one is it, I don't know, whichever one you choose. When you breathe in, focus on the divine masculine. When you breathe out, focus on the divine feminine. Ooh, and become the awakened couple that within yourself you are in love. So rather than go to somebody looking for them to give you something that you think you don't have or missing, you can come, you show up. But we also recognize that the feminine and the masculine has different qualities. But when you show up as who you are and not afraid to be vulnerable, intimacy takes a whole new meaning. Oh, when you bring your insecurities and everything, your dirty underwear, you bring it to the table. That's right. I got stuff. Can you handle my stuff? Because if you can't handle my stuff, we can have a shift. That's what relationship is about. Ha, are you ready to let your stuff hit the fan? Yes, yes, yes. You're listening to the Ask Life Coach at a radio show. It is time for Celestial Moment, and she drops her medicine, just a moment of it, and you catch more of Celestial's medicine on her show this Sunday, January 13th, 8 p.m. Eastern. And where she goes in details is an hour show, so you could ask questions, you can call in for readings, and oh my God, she knows Celeste. She'll be pulling on everything. She's a spider woman. She likes to weave her web, so she's gonna weave her web right now. Hey Celeste.
Hey.
I like doing that before I break up.
I know.
I like
to giggle. Oh, we're just coming giggling. But hey, I'm me. All is well. I like to giggle. I have to tell you guys that this conversation is so inspired. And when Richard was talking about the connection between Bill and Hillary, I automatically just had this thought. Like, I wonder if we would have been prepared for the dynamic partnership of Michelle Obama and Barack Obama had we not had that experience of Bill and Hillary. And, of course, there are other couples thinking about Eleanor Roosevelt, but it was just hitting me so hard. And, oh, Richard, when you tap into that Lilith story, call me. You're going to love it. That is Adam's first wife. Okay, we're going to get to it. I'm ready for more of this conversation. I told man, Richard, hear me when I tell you, when you tap into that story, your whole world, you're just going to be like, what? It's amazing. I love it. And you're a man who loves women, and you love women with power. All right, that's enough me messing with Richard Moss now. Good afternoon, family. I am Celeste Morgan, and it is my pleasure to bring you Celestial Moments. Numbers give us information to help us navigate and embrace all that is showing up in our life right now. I come bearing a number gift. First, I have to say happy birthday to Elvis Presley and David Bowie. Are you kidding me? These guys were born on the same day. Talk about creative energy. Now remember, the energy of the day is also the lesson card for the whole year for any lucky person celebrating birthday today. And the number today is the energy we all are collectively following for the whole year. So we all get to play. 2013 equals 6, and 6 is the energy of the day. So let's pay close attention to the divine gifts of a diamond year. The number 6 is a loving, stable, and harmonious vibration ruled by the planet Venus, also known as Cosmic Mother. Venus governs the sensuous side of human nature. She is the lord of refined attributes, romance, beauty, fine arts, and sexual pleasure. Venus is also a little busy. She just entered Capricorn today. An amazing time to get what you most love done. With style, ease, and grace. You know Capricorn is a worker, right? Combine those energies and get it done with creativity. 6 also makes an appearance in one of the holy texts. God created man on the 6th day of creation. So God created man in his own image, and in the image of God he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then we have the snake. No, not the one in the Garden of Eden, but the one in medicine cards, which is about shedding its skin to reveal new life through transmutation. Our 6th chakra is our 3rd eye chakra and awakens with the beauty of inner awareness. The 6th letter of the alphabet is F, and words like freedom, funky, and functional connect us to the magical power of 6. Now, today we're going to put the spotlight on the 6th card in tarot. That would be the Lover's card. The Lover's card is astrologically connected to the sign of Gemini, the twins. Could the twins of Gemini and the couple on the Lover's card direct us to a message about combining the divine feminine and divine masculine within ourselves? We often miss that message thinking only about romance when the lovers show up. There is far more going on with this card than attracting your mate. You learn to attract what you most want by being the love you so crave. There is no magic to do or spells to create. You simply raise your vibration and drop the stories of gender role control, expectations, and domination. You create a new story and grow up by putting your love story of illusions to bed. You bless yourself with the gift of awareness and stand. Not fall, to embrace the awakened couple within yourself. Happy 6-year family, all is well. And that's the story of 6 through the Lover's card in tarot. I'll see you on Wednesday around 1 for another celestial moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Celeste. I appreciate you. You too.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow.
Around 1.
I'm working on getting your voice right to master it. I'm Celeste. Okay, stop it.
Back to work.
All right. Thanks, Celeste. Yes, indeed, you are listening to the Ask Life Coach at a Radio Show. My guest is Richard Moss, Dr. Richard Moss, the author of Inside Out Healing. We're talking about embracing the awakened couple, pay more attention to the divine feminine, and be open to a new awareness about ourselves, about God, about life. And get to a point where we say, well, maybe there is more. Of course there is. There's always more. Now, we're going to go back to Richard. So, Richard, before the break, I was asking, you know, I want us to talk about men don't really listen to women. And, I'm sure all the females listening when you said that went, hey, men, Richard, tell them. So, I don't know if it's our makeup. I don't know if because... You know, as we're talking about, there is a we have a society that doesn't value the feminine energy, because I believe we pay attention to what we value. So if we don't value something, even though we say we love our wives or partners, and this, I mean, even if it's a same-sex relationship, if we don't value that feminine, I think we won't pay much attention to it. So I'm wondering if part of mentioning has something to do with not valuing that the woman, valuing the feminine energy? Or do you see it differently?
Well, you know, we don't seem to have any choice with language to separate male and female. And the question is, in the living, how close can we get to each other without losing ourselves in enculturated rules and things that so I don't think a man can develop himself completely without the influence of a woman, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, women got the right to vote in 1876 in New Zealand, first place in the world. 1976, the last place in the modern world when women got the right to vote was actually one of the cantons of Switzerland. And the reason I say it is just evolution, just change. So we're moving in free societies toward a breakdown of all these conditioned. I'm not sure I'm speaking to what you said because I missed a couple of words of what you said, but we're moving in free societies toward challenging all of these old conditioned ways of relating to each other. And it's very disruptive. It's very confusing. And just to start from the notion of, okay, if I'm a man and I really want to find out what it's like to be a very complete man, that is, in an archetypal sense, to be the king, that is, to take care of my affairs, to be able to take care of my family, to be the magician, that is, to be able to really dive deep into consciousness and self-reflect and tap into some of those higher energies, healing energies, and some of the energies you're carrying now is in your coaching at a and then if I want to tap into the warrior energy and be able to stand up in front of the darkest of feelings and be spacious, all of that inseparable also from this other quality, lover. And, you know, if you take the lover, and then the king is not so strong or healthy, the warrior is imbalanced, and the magician uses his magic in a bad way. So the lover is this part of us that emerges out of profound intimacy. Use the word intimacy. And my friend Jack says intimacy is a global affair, which is a wonderful play on words. You know, I mean, we really need deeper intimacy, much deeper intimacy. And, you know, as much as we like sex and nature pushes us towards sex because procreation means the next generation of human beings, and intimacy is more than sex. And, and intimacy can be really scary. I mean, to be intimate with someone, really intimate with someone, is like what you said, putting your stuff on the table, letting the stuff hit the fan, you know. And so what we need tools for this, you know. We need special kinds of tools. And before I go any further, am I going in the right direction for you?
Yes, you are, but I, one of the things that I'm thinking, as you're sharing this, I'm thinking of some of the listeners who may actually say, yes, Richard, I hear what you're saying, but how do I communicate that to my husband, my boyfriend, my male friends who just don't listen? How do I teach them, help them, assist them to tap into themselves so they can really hear me and we can really dance together?
Well, that's a really good question. The reason I do it is because I want to, because I've made myself unhappy and I've hurt women down, not because I ever wanted to, but because I had to find my way through life like all of us do. So I want to listen. So when a man who's listening now says, okay, I want to listen, so how do you do it? Well, one thing is you do some things inside of yourself. You assume that you don't know how to listen, and the ways that you can get signals that you're probably not listening well is when you start to feel yourself contract, get tight, get angry, close down, and want to talk over the woman or contradict her or interrupt her. So the first, I can't tell anyone how they can, you know, if a woman finally says to a man, you don't listen to me, and I will not talk to you or make love with you until you want to listen to me, maybe he'll listen. maybe
what
he'll listen.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I have a feeling that here, even though you and I are men and we're talking about this, that really the leadership in this process has to come from women. They finally have to, and are, and have been for a long time. And it isn't just women. It's emerging in the culture, which is why I use the example of voting. But, you know, which everybody has to, you know, the decision to give the right to vote, it may have been a male decision, but once that decision is made and women and men vote, then we're, in a certain sense, we're making a statement, which is we have equal input into certain choices for the future of society or for the future of a country or a city or whatever. So things aren't working so well. The divorce rate is really high. Which in one way is bad and in one way is good. It's bad because there is enormous suffering going on in men and in women and in the children when that happens. And it's good because it's going on because we haven't yet figured out how to have divinely inspired, let's say, relationships, deeply respectful, consciousness-building, intelligence-building relationships with each other. And that means communication. So the first thing a man needs to be aware of is not to interrupt, and a woman as well. So you sit down, and maybe you create some sort of a sacred object. That's what we do, and you, like a talking stick from an indigenous people or a Native American tradition. It doesn't have to be a stick. It is just something that you say, okay, this is going to be our sacred object. And it could just be a stone, a pebble, a beautiful piece of glass. It could be anything, a feather. Something your grandmother gave you or your grandfather gave you. It doesn't matter. And when she's holding it, he doesn't interrupt her. Not at all. He doesn't correct her. He doesn't say, no, that didn't happen on Tuesday. It happened on Friday. Even if it did happen on Friday and she's wrong and vice versa. And you try not to talk too long, and you really want to say to each other what's important. Okay? And then inside of yourself, you have to go into your heart, not into your head. Because the head is the past. What we hear with thinking is just a way of trying to put things back into something from the past that we're familiar with. So we got to start listening with our hearts, with our bodies, with ourselves, with nowness, with unconditioned being. And that means we're going to be vulnerable. That means what can be said can enter us, can hurt, can penetrate us, can scare us, can shame us. And I don't mean that the person who's talking to us is trying to hurt us or trying to shame us. I'm saying you listen with your whole being instead of listening with the past. And you try to hear that the person who's speaking to you isn't you and isn't your psychology and isn't your life experience. And you know, opposites attract is this old expression. And the man I was talking about before, he's a white man, he's married to an African-American woman. And, you know, that's big cultural differences. And the bigger the difference between the two people, the bigger the energy that happens when they fall in love. And the bigger the energy that happens when they really reverence each other and really hear each other. But the bigger the cultural difference, the harder it is to bridge.
Yes.
So it's more likely to break down. And already we have a giant cultural difference just between male and female because of conditioning. So that's hard enough. And then we're marrying between different religions, which wasn't allowed in the past. And that's hard enough. Now we're marrying between different races. And that's adding all kinds of things, complexity. So the energy field, when there's great difference, can be gigantic because it's a big, to bridge that energy, it's a powerful field of consciousness that's created. But it's hard to do. And when you take away the rules, you say that here a man does this and a woman is obedient in this way and this is a woman's role and this is, and those rules are falling away now, and you take away those rules, we have to invent new rules of engagement, new rules of intimacy. The military has rules of engagement for when soldiers go into battle. We need new rules of intimacy, new rules of listening, new skill sets, if we want love to flourish and if we want the fullest potential, because it'll never end. We'll always be moving toward a fuller and fuller potential. If we want that fullest potential now for a man as a man and a woman as a woman and the energy of their relationship, we need these new skills, and we have to invent them. So I've been inventing what I call consecrated conversation, and it's like I'm following in the examples of some of my mentors, like, as I mentioned, Jack Zimmerman and Jackie McCandless, and they have an interesting book called Flesh and Spirit. Yes, let's say I'm going to listen. I want to listen. There's a special time in our relationship for listening, for talking, for working on the stuff, for putting it on the table. And we're not going to interrupt each other, and we're going to let each other know that we've heard each other. So when my partner puts down that sacred object, that talking stick, I sit quiet for a while. I want to feel what her words have created in me. I want to feel what her perspective, her thoughts, her feelings, you know, have created in me. I want to make a big space. I want my heart to be much bigger than the room I'm sitting in. I want my heart to be bigger than the house we're living in. I want to visualize my heart so big that I don't have to protect myself. You know, Tempest in the Teapot? You know?
Yes. I like... Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go, go, go.
Well, I was going to say, I like the... Well, the point of don't talk too long, because sometimes put everything in one conversation so we make our point, and just the importance of really for allowing space. And just kind of want to bring this in a even more practical approach and maybe making it, bringing it, I don't know what the word is, so I'm just going to move into it. One of the things you said is the whole idea of inventing, and I think people could, this will make it easier. You talk about, in conversation and preparation for this show, you talk about the human consciousness. It's really about the journey of invention. So if a woman and a man are coming together because they want to create or want to allow this awakened couple, is if we're both coming from the place of knowing that we're inventing something new, maybe something that hasn't been done before, then there isn't judgment. There isn't criticism, because we know we're birthing something new. And you also talk about spirituality is relationship and consciousness is relationship. So this whole idea that may seem strange to some people or familiar for some people is really about doing consciousness work. It's learning to really understand ourselves on a deeper level. Can you talk more about consciousness as relationship, and how we can take the new ideas to incorporate it into the spiritual work that people are already doing?
Yeah. Well, of course, that's what's really in my last two books very clearly, The Mandala of Being and Inside Out Healing. So the nature of the, you know, I've had people write to me and say, oh, don't you know that there's a unit of consciousness, there's a one consciousness? And I say, yeah, and if that's where you live, nothing happens. It's only when you let that consciousness be in relationship with what? Well, okay, right now I'm aware that I'm speaking ideas and I'm listening in my body to how I feel as I talk. So there's a part of me that's aware, and it's aware of my sensations. It's aware of what I'm expressing. It's going to make me read about Lilith later and inform myself that way. So there's... consciousness is really a relationship, and when it's awakened in a person, then that person is no longer automatically identified with his belief system and his childhood conditioning or his reactions to his parents' choices or her reactions to parents' choices. Now you go and you say, oh, wait a minute, that's what my mother said about money, or that's what my mother said about men, and I took it on, but that's not me. I'm who I really am is that which is aware that I have been conditioned, that I have been influenced by my parents, by my culture, by my society. I really am curious. I want to know how I have been influenced. So I ask myself a lot of questions, and I look. And And when we're in a conversation, a consecrated conversation with a person, and you say something to that person about them or about yourself, then you have a chance to look and say, now what's underneath this? What's the deeper consciousness here? Is this about avoiding fear? Is this about feeling out of control? Is this about wanting to feel safe? What does the relationship want now? So, see, that's the question for people who want to use the notion of the divine couple.
Yes.
That there's not just a man, there's not just a woman, there's not just two men, there's not just two women, there's not just me and you and this. There's also a relationship. And it is not a intellectual concept. It's actually a tangible thing. It's an energy. And the relationship wants things. You know, a marriage comes to an end and you find a new partner, and that relationship allows something new to be birthed in you and into the world. I'm birthing new things into my work and my world through my relationship now with my partner, Annalisa, because she's a different woman than I have been with before, and I'm a different man being with her. So invention means that we really don't know where we're going, but I'm not just going to ask me what I want, or I'm not just going to ask her what she wants. I'm going to ask, okay, what does the relationship want?
And I'm going to... That is a powerful question.
Imagine
that's a powerful question.
Very powerful question. You know, what does the relationship want? And people, I've shared this question now for years with people, and it confuses them because we are so self-involved, so self-centered.
Yeah.
We don't realize that there's actually a force field that's created as... two people bridge the differences between them and connect up in mutual respect and in intimacy at different levels, at all levels. The more complete the connection in intimacy, the more powerful the field of the relationship. And then the relationship may want that couple to be in service to consciousness in their community, or the relationship may want that couple to go together to another country and help people dig wells and plant trees, or the relationship may want that one of those people becomes an artist, or the relationship may want to support someone as a politician or as a community servant. The relationship wants something. It wants something. It's also in service to consciousness. It wants to tell the man he's not listening to the woman. It wants to tell the woman she's not risking penetrating her man with her knowing. You know, the relationship, you know, from time to time, we put down our talking stick on a third pillow, on a third position, and that's the position of our relationship. And then we take turns experimenting with trying to give voice to the relationship itself. What does it want? What does it want right now? Does it want us to make love, or does it want us to just be quiet with each other? Does it want us to address something difficult right now, or does it want us to wait till we're a little more rested? But it probably really wants us to address anything that's not being spoken honestly and clearly to each other, because the relationship wants to get stronger. You know, people will go and sit in the presence of some awakened guru because they want to receive the energy, the transmission from that man or that awakened woman. But what about when two people are doing pioneering, inventing work in their couple, and they sit down with other couples? Mm. Or they sit down with a man? You know, when we start to see that the awakening of consciousness on our planet is going to come not only from the field of a man who's gone deep into the deeper consciousness, or a woman who's done the same, which was a very old path. But there's a new path, which is a man and a woman are going very, very deeply into intimacy, creating a field which bridges the differences in both in their sex, in their culture, in their race, in their religious background, in their family of origin dynamics, you know, their parenting and how they were parented, where they were raised. And they're bridging all that into this present moment aliveness, this field of energy that is the relationship, and then the relationship radiates out. The relationship affects every man and woman that comes into their field, the same way that you would want to sit in the field of the Dalai Lama, or Catholic wants to feel the energy of the Pope, or one of the, you know, so many Westerners make trips to the East to sit with Sai Baba when he was alive, or these other gurus. And all that's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And let's start sitting in front of people, men and women, who are inventing profound intimacy in conversation, in lovemaking, not just sexual craft, but and where the woman is really leading the man into this profound, deep space that she can enter in lovemaking, not just responding to the man, but leading. And you know, we're just, this is an adventure. It's an invention. We haven't figured out everything that can happen in intimacy. Nobody's lived it completely. And that's kind of what I'm pointing to. And that's why I think someday we have more and more world leaders now that are women. And hopefully these women are being informed in their consciousness by profound relationship with men, with a man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we have these men that are leaders, but some of them just have horrendous relationships with women. Some.
Right.
But some of them...
So.
Well, like Celeste mentioned the Roosevelts, or maybe...
Yeah.
We did, I'm not sure.
Celeste.
You mentioned the Roosevelts, and she mentioned Barack and Michelle Obama. There's something about their relationship that I think is really one of the reasons I was happy to see him become president.
I say amen. I mean, when I see both of them or see them individually, for me, it's almost like, I don't know if they do, they ask themselves, what does this relationship want? And Michelle herself, for me, she's like authenticity on legs. And when we bring that to the table, when we're willing to bring who we are to the table, it makes a difference, and it's attractive. But, yeah, I definitely agree with you. One last question I want to ask before we release this conversation is, because part of asking, which I think for me that's going to be one of my main takeaways from this that I got to apply, what does this relationship want? I mean, and that applies to all relationships, romantic relationships, professional relationships. It doesn't matter if it's your ex, somebody you know, a neighbor. We can just sometimes ask ourselves, what does this relationship want? And I think, you know, that calls us to go deeper and make space for something new. But sometimes, even with the courage to ask that question, we still might be afraid of showing our insecurity. So as we get ready to release this interview, I want to ask you, what tips or how can we go about making space, making room for our insecurities?
What a beautiful question. You know, the patriarchal man doesn't want to show he's weak. The patriarchal man doesn't want to show he's needy. In patriarchy, there's a lot of insecurity about our relationships, a lot of jealousy. This stuff has to come out. It has to be placed on the table as part of the relationship in a consecrated way, not so that it shatters the relationship, but it may profoundly challenge each of us emotionally, psychologically, in ways. But relationship is meant to do that. And so a lot of relationships break up simply because people can't be vulnerable with each other, or they don't feel safe in expressing their insecurity. But my experience is that a woman, a substantial woman, never rejects a man who shows that he's insecure. She might reject a man that behaves immaturely, but not a man who consciously sits there and expresses his vulnerability or his sense of insecurity. And there's a zillion things that can make us insecure on any given day in our lives. So you don't become, either as a man or a woman, whiny and a little child that's to be protected by your partner. You are just simply saying, I'm scared now, or I don't know if I can do this. My partner told me the other day that I had interrupted her a few times, and I just turned to her and I said, you know, it so deeply distresses me to realize that I'm still doing that, even though I've so dedicated myself to wake up and be aware and not do it, and that it's such an old habit. And I've gotten much, much better. But, you know, to know that in some way I've disappointed my partner or limited her and thus in a certain sense stifled the relationship, you know, makes me sad. So to learn to lead a conversation from vulnerability instead of from anger or judgment, you know, to start your conversation from where you feel insecure or that it's really a little scary to try to tell someone how you feel about their behavior. And instead of saying, you do this and you do that, say, start from your vulnerability. Lead from your sense of uncertainty. Lead from your sense of insecurity. Because in a paradoxical way, if I can lead into an important conversation from my insecurity, what I'm really saying is I can be present for my insecurity, which in a funny, paradoxical way means I'm not so insecure.
Right.
I'm conscious of my insecurity.
Right.
I'm conscious of my insecurity, but because I can bring it to the relationship, it means that I'm not that insecure. And it means that the relationship is big enough to handle, to make space for my insecurity, her insecurity, our places of vulnerability, our places of distrust because of our early conditioning and other things. And let's keep inventing together. Everybody out there that's listening to us, invent intimacy, invent loving, invent caring, because it's not finished. We haven't found our way. We're only just a little bit on the way. And romantic love, like you mentioned before, is what pulls us so tightly toward each other. After that, we have to do serious relationship work. And there are some pioneers ahead of us. We can read what they've written or listen to them as people are listening to us now. And everybody is responsible to invent this. That's what the future is. We do not have to buy. We're not the prisoners of what our ancestors were able to accomplish. Some of our ancestors went far beyond us. The vast majority are way behind us. That's why we're evolving. But we're not the prisoners of the past, and we're the inventors of what's to come.
Richard Moss, I love you. I am so, so grateful for who you are. You speak to my soul. You speak to my intellect. You speak to my whole being. And I love how you download truth, universal truth. And I will go as far as saying what you share is very simple, but for some people it can be challenging because some of us are addicted to drama. You know, if we don't have the drama in the relationship, then we're not really doing the work. But the real work
that
is
that's
really,
why I said let your heart be big. I mean,
exactly.
Let your heart be big, because then it won't become drama.
It'll become divine. Yes.
It's just like saying, if I'm a big space, then I'll have room to hear this. If I'm a small space, I'm going to react and defend and attack or withdraw or judge. But if I'm a big space, I'll hear the other. I'll learn from the other. I'll feel the world of the other. It's just being a bigger space, consciously choosing to be a bigger space. The relationship
and I think
wants
it's also
to make a bigger space.
Yes, and I think the mention of this new awareness is important to allow others who are not willing to invent or not willing to have a big heart about it to be who they need to be, rather than saying, see, you can't even be big about it. Just say, okay, this is what's happening. Because sometimes the invention means that we're going to have to let something go. It doesn't mean we separate the relationship, but we just have to say, I surrender, because sometimes in that moment it could be maybe the person is not ready. But it's a dance, as you said earlier. It's a dance, the agreement to lead and the agreement to follow. You know, we can talk about this for days and days and days and days and days, and we will, and the listeners will continue the conversation. But before I release you, Richard, I just want to know if there's anything else you want to share, anything else that's bubbling up for you that you want to share with our listeners.
Oh, I wanted to thank you. Thank you for creating a format for conversations like this, and thank you for your passion, and Celeste as well, for what she shared before, the richness of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if people understand just a tiny bit of this, it's not really meant to become school knowing that you tuck inside and, now I learned this. It's really meant to set us free. And,
mm-hmm.
And it's responsibility to have freedom. And it's also about faith. It's not based in beliefs. It's about faith in yourself and faith in the relationship. How are you going to have faith in the relationship if you don't bring to the relationship everything?
Mm.
Or even the things you think that would destroy the relationship.
Yes.
You know, I have a friend, he's gone now, a wonderful French spiritual teacher. He used to say all the time, to learn to take the risk of the other. Have to learn to take the risk of the other, that they will be able to hear it, that they will stay there. I've watched my partner get into a very deep space inside of herself, pain space, withdraw into it, and dive into her body. And that's one of the things women can teach men, how to dive into the body, really dive into the body, not into the head. And when she comes back out, the field of our relationships change. There's more space. She's made a bigger space for something. Instead of having to push me away, she's made a bigger space in herself, which transforms me too. And I've watched her do it a number of times, and I've known this. She said ironically she learned it from me through my teaching over the years, but she actually puts it into practice in such a profound way. This diving deep into the body and letting things happen, not with the intellect, not in the head, but in this alchemy of sensation as we breathe into our bodies, and then we emerge and then have a new conversation with our partner. We're really capable of integrating things without understanding them intellectually at a very deep level if we'll just stay inside of ourselves and not run away into our reactions and thinking too fast.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we're wishing you luck on your retreats that are coming up in France. You've got quite a few coming up in February, right?
Yeah. At the end of January,
yes.
I'll be in L.A. People can find that on my website or on Facebook for an evening, a three-hour evening, with a new center that's opening there. And that's on the night of the 26th in Los Angeles, in Tarzana, just outside of Los Angeles. And then I head off to Europe. And it's been a wonderful 5 weeks now of quiet time here at home, and I'm going to go out cross-country skiing in a few minutes, get some exercise.
Oh, wow. Thank you. Thank you very much, Richard.
Okay, thank you.
We truly
and
appreciate you.
And blessings to everybody.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
We're the future.
We are the future. That's right. And the future is now. And the listeners are sending you love and being grateful. Yes, Richard Moss. I love that man. I love him so much. And we do need to, you know, it's like making, he talked about his friends, which is interesting, actually, Jack Zimmerman and Jacqueline McCandless. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. You know, Jack and Jacqueline. Interesting. You know, flesh and spirit. You've got to bring it together. You know, sometimes we can get very spiritual and like, oh, yes. And, you know, I just saw all his aura and I knew he was my soulmate. But you know what? Your soulmate will set you on fire. And while your soulmate is setting you on fire, you need stuff to put in the fire. So if you don't bring the stuff to put in the fire, guess what? You're like, hey, what happened? And you must be courageous enough, willing to bring your stuff to the fire so they can get burned up. Wow. I am so grateful for my life. I'm grateful for you listeners. You've been part of this conversation. You know, we co-created this together because you're observing through your listening, your energy, things that Richard was saying, things that I'm saying, things that you're hearing. It's all because energetically we're here. You may think a thought, and Richard brought it up. So let's just kind of look at, you know, just be aware of how powerful we are, and knowing that we're so much more. Richard just said, we are the future. And guess what? The future is now. So if your relationship is working, not just romantic relationship. Let's really, I want to emphasize that. And that included, but if it's working or not, you may want to ask, what does the relationship want? You can't run from it. You can divorce it. You can deny it. You can do whatever you want. But what is seeking to be birthed, it's always going to be there. So because individually we are all part of the birthing process. I would say the female, of course, yes, duh, the egg, and the man, the sperm. We must come together to birth a new consciousness. We must come together to birth a new consciousness. So as the egg or the sperm, you have to be healthy. You have to be whole. And you got to make space for the fertilization. You got to make space for the germination, if you will. You got to make space for the development. You got to make space. You got to become vulnerable. And vulnerable doesn't mean weak. As a matter of fact, in your vulnerability lies your strength. I know for me, when I'm having conversation with people and they've been vulnerable, that touches me more than anything else. You know, vulnerability, authenticity is sexy. Because when you are vulnerable in your relationship, when you allow people into your world, they just something happens for them. We see when there's a crisis. We see 9/11. We see when there's a tsunami. We see when it's Sandy Hook. We all start crying, and we feel moved. And sometimes in our pain, because now we've connected with somebody else's pain, we might become judgmental or become prayerful. Let's be the place where others get to see themselves. Let's be the place where others get to see where they need to grow, where they need to be more open. Let's be the place where people feel comfortable to be big about this, to allow their heart to become bigger. We can do it. The fact that you're listening to this conversation means you are the chosen one. So it's time to heal from the inside out. Through the that dwells in you. We started the show talking about breath. Your breath begins and ends with God. Your breath begins and ends with God. So it's now your responsibility, if you choose to, the mission is to be willing to do the work, willing to grow. Now, together, reinvent or invent a new way, or be the space where this new idea of the awakened couple is expressing itself. Sometimes you gotta massage it a little to have it work. You know, when you sit down with your partner, you may have an issue with, getting to a place without you hearing this conversation and it feels good. But guess what? You got to get to the shop floor. You know, I use the analogy. You got to go to the shop floor where you're not interacting with the customers. I remember when I was training to work at Rich's. I don't know if they're just in the South. I think it is, but they're Macy's bought them out. But anyway, I digress. They were training us. Sometimes I didn't quite get it. And then some things I understood, I thought it was easy. But after 2 weeks of training and a test, to the shop floor and not interact with customers. And the things that I learned, the things that I thought I knew, it was like, I need the manager, please. And then when the manager was showing it to me and the customer was there, sometimes the customer tells me what to do. I realized, I got to embody this new way. So we are all being called, those of you listening right now on the phone, online, or the archive, I don't care if it's 10,000 years if they're still using MP3 files. If you're listening to this, you're being called. You are the future, and the future is now. Let go. And even if you have the judgment, bring that to the table. Bring the judgment to the table. let your partner know that you've been judgmental, you've been critical. Oh my God, there's something so powerful when you can tell your mate, your partner, your friend, that, you know, I really got to be honest. I've been judgmental of you. I've been critical. I've been criticizing how you did things, and I realize I just didn't know. I didn't know. I realized that I have limited information. So I ask for your forgiveness. Oh, my God. Just, I can't tell you what's going to happen, but I know through my own things that I've tried, things that I've practiced, that you will meet yourself in a whole new way. It's really about willing to be the revival of a love story. Yes, I love that segue. Corny, but I love it. All right, Sherry, I'm going to have you underneath me for a minute. Nothing else needs to be said. Be willing to make room for your dark feelings. There's so much power in it. Well, you got to reinvent the plan B. I love you. I bless you. I appreciate you. And I thank God for you. Yes, yes, yes. Be love. Be true to yourself. And allow the love to keep flowing in and out. Be loved. This is Sherry Marie. Revival of a love story. Plan B needs to be reinvented. Ooh, Sherry, don't make me sing. I won't. I'm out of here. I love you so much. Thank you for being part of this wonderful, soulful experience. I will see you tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern, with Donella Ford. Brace yourself. 2013 is all about the love. Sherry Marie. Spiritual two steps. May I have this dance? Set free. I'm out of here.
In the mirror's eyes, I'm wounded.
Life Conversations. We dare you to live your best life.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting in the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.